And through the hour, we've been replaying some highlights from the field hearing of the House Ag Committee here in Moorhead, Minnesota this morning, brought together all the congressmen from the states of, well, not all of them from Minnesota, obviously. There's 9 of them, but the guys who are really interested in agriculture, and, of course, North Dakota and South Dakota's Congress representatives. So thanks for being there, and thanks for listening. And one of the other folks who were there is North Dakota Corn Growers Executive Director Dale Irie. Hello, Dale.
Hey, Mick, how you doing today?
Well, not too bad, except I was, it was standing room only, and I was standing there for about 3 hours, so I saw you had a good chair.
We did have a good chair, and hey, I got a surprise guest in the room with me here. I had Mike Clemens, our North Dakota Corn Grower Board member from out in Jamestown area, Wimbledon, in the room with me. He was at the meeting with us today, so I'd like to have Mike come on board with us too, Mick.
That'd be good. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how you doing today? Great. It was cloudy to start with, but we got the sun to shine now, so life is good.
You bet. And the rest of the week, we call it mostly sunny and growing degree days a-coming, huh?
That corn is going to grow like crazy when it gets to 90 degrees here at the end of the week.
You bet. Well, Mike, we heard from congressmen, we heard from the NRCS, we heard from people, scientists, on the effectiveness and the good that tile drainage does. Have you ever had any issues with the NRCS?
Well, we have. You know, I have had, we're going back almost 4 years now, is when I put a request in to have a wetland determination done, and it took over 3 years to get it done. And when they gave me my determination, I still wasn't satisfied with my determination, so I had to appeal it, which took more time. And we finally worked our way through it with my appeal process. We got to an agreement to where both sides, I felt we were both very satisfied on our final outcome, and I ended up mitigating some wetlands to a different area on my property, and it worked quite smoothly. It was just the long process to get to the end of the road is where the real frustrating part is, because farmers, we look at it as a season at a time. And most of the times, we're looking a month ahead, we want to do something. We don't want to wait 3 years. We want to wait 30 days to make a decision.
So it must have made you feel pretty good when Kristi Noem, South Dakota representative, came out with guns a-blazing at their state NRCS director.
Well, that was a little scalding, I thought, but you know, maybe that needed to be done at that point. And it was very interesting to see the progress in North Dakota and South Dakota, which was way far behind compared to Minnesota. Minnesota, they want to get down to a 30-day determination, and our two states, North Dakota and South Dakota, are still talking over a year.
Well, and I think, you know, Brian Hefty and both Colin Peterson said, I could do it in 30 minutes or less. So it should, neither one of those options should take that long.
No, and I think I could do it as quick as they could also do it. You know, this is my 41st year. Boy, I tell you, if I don't know my old ground by now after 41 years, nobody's going to know it better than me. I know where the wetlands are.
I think that all of the congressmen and the NRCS they're all saying that things are going to get better. There will be improvement. That's got to be good news.
It's a step in the right direction anyway, but in the meantime, we're still a backlog in North Dakota, so we'll have to work our way through it.
All righty. Mike, let's talk a little bit about a subject you are very close to, ethanol. Last week, or a couple of weeks ago, the Environmental Protection Agency released their RVO, their Renewable Volumetric Obligation. Well, what were your thoughts?
Well, not as happy as I should have been, and it was just like last year, about the same type of frustration. You know, the Congress set the benchmarks where we needed to get to, and that was really the job of big oil and oil companies to get it into the gasoline supply. You know, we've held up our end of the bargain. We've built our plants. We invested in our plants. We've invested in our industry, raising corn, and now you're kind of cutting us. You know, you didn't chop our ankles off, but you surely did take our toes off, that here we are. We're all geared up to satisfy that market, and now we're being constrained just because the EPA has a little different idea on how to write rules than really Congress has set as mandatory.
Yeah, 15 billion gallons is what they said is the law, and EPA has finally got it up to 14.8. Why didn't they just go to 15?
Well, it just, you know, what do they talk about in their back rooms? We have no idea. But, you know, I went to the hearing last year in Kansas City, and it seemed like the discussion was revolving around on getting through that blend wall. Why EPA thinks that's such a difficult task to get through when we have retailers that have testified that, you know, their volumes are up to 20 to 25% of ethanol. And EPA is essentially capping it at 10% of gasoline usage in this country. So tell me where is that coming from, that it can be done, and you don't have to work very hard at it, but it can be done. You have your E85 fuels, and you have E15 fuels. That is easily a simple way to get through that blend wall. But EPA seems to not recognize that gasoline is going to be blended at more than 10%.
Mike, are you headed to Kansas City again?
I can't this year. I got another commitment. They didn't check my schedule before they had this hearing, but Kevin Schoonis from our growers and the national board is going to be heading down there. And we'll also be submitting written testimony in there.
It is an EPA field hearing, and they kind of got their ears full last year, but I don't know, didn't make a whole lot of difference, did it?
It did. It did raise it a little bit, not near as much as we wanted to. I tell you, the testimony last year was easily 10 to 1 in favor of raising the standards that where they were at. It was the longest hearing, I think, in the history of this country. It started at 9 o'clock in the morning. I think it ended at 9 o'clock that evening. It was, and they had two hearing rooms going simultaneously. That's how many people testified, and it was easily 10 to 1 in favor of raising the minimum standards by EPA.
So would you like to have more corn growers down there? Is there strength in numbers, or should we be economic, you know, with our verbiage?
Well, strength in numbers never hurts anything. It's really the message that you have to get through to them to make a decision that they can swallow the pill for, if you have to say, to raise that level, and they have to have ammunition on reasons why to do it. So that's why it's important to hear a lot of testimony. And you hear a lot of repeat testimonies, but you hear a lot of interesting ways that people are getting more ethanol into fuel, and that's what they ought to be listening to.
Yeah, Mike, ethanol plants are doing okay right now, aren't they?
Well, they've had a tougher quarter, I tell you, because there was a glut of ethanol in the market, and that's kind of working its way through the system. People are driving more. That's going to surely drive up the demand for ethanol. So the next quarters are looking better than the last quarter we went through. But, you know, they were treading water. It's just like every business model. You can't hit a home run every time, but the object is to stay in business for the next go-around. And, you know, farmers, we've been doing it for years. We want to stay in business for the next go-around. And we have some good years, and we have some poorer years. So, you know, at the end of the road, it's great for the economy, for agriculture in the country.
Well, Mike, you made a great point at the beginning that farmers and ethanol companies have done their part. They've built the plants, they're functional, they're efficient and getting more efficient, and I guess it's time for the other end, the oil companies and the EPA to do their part. Mike, one last question. Another kind of a letdown from EPA last week on their release on the atrazine as having a negative impact to the ecology. Your thoughts on that?
Oh boy, I tell you, I think they put the levels down to, I believe it was like 0.4 pounds per acre. And currently we like to, on our farm, we'll run anywhere from 0.75 pounds up to 1 pound per acre. And it just hits that extra weed spectrum out there. That's the chemicals that we're currently using wouldn't take care of. So putting that little shot of atrazine in there really does make all your other chemicals work well and give you a little residual. And we've been doing it for several years and don't see any detrimental effect. And actually enhancement of having nice clean fields out there.
Yeah, I talked with Greg Krissick of Kansas Corn Growers at the beginning of the hour, and you know, mentioned the I was using atrazine in the 1960s. I hate to say it, and it still works.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike Clemens, Wimbledon, North Dakota farmer on the North Dakota Corn Board. Dale, I'll let you talk next time. How's that?
All right. Thanks, Mick. Appreciate you calling out.
All right. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah. Bye now.
Bye.